Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Doug Matthews is in studio with us. We go on the road with Coach Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Coach, how are you?
I am great.
Great.
I really am.
You a big Halloween guy?
I am. But more from a standpoint, I love it. I live in a neighborhood right next to a school, so there's a bunch of about 120 homes in there, and all of them at my house have a bunch of kids. And it's neat to see them come by. It really is. And, you know, so polite.
Are you generous on the candy?
Yes.
Or you are?
Well, my wife is.
Okay, but the Matthews house is the place to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you love the small bars and, from Kit Kat to, I'm a big Snickers guy.
Oh, me too.
And I feel a lot better of eating 10 of those instead of one Snickers. I don't feel like I'm getting as many calories.
That's right.
I only had 10.
10 small ones.
A little glass of milk. You know, how can you beat that?
I'm excited to see the kids in the neighborhood tonight, too. It'll be fun.
You know, one thing, quick thing on that, we'll get into the show. It would amaze you how many head football coaches, majors are like this. Majors actually dress up on Halloween, and
what would he dress up as?
Different things.
Give me an example.
But he it'd always be sometimes
a football coach.
Yeah, but he loved for kids to come by his house, and he would greet them at the door.
That's awesome.
And he didn't have many come by his house out there, but he was always talking about that. It is kind of surprising you wouldn't think that, you know. But he was a big Halloween guy.
How about Tennessee's performance at South Carolina? Let's start there. Your overall assessment of what you saw top to bottom.
Well, every opportunity to win. You know, what you try to do is, and especially what Tennessee is trying to do this year, you want to get games into the fourth quarter with an opportunity to win. That's the type of team they have. They're not going to blow anybody out, and I'm talking about conference games now. And they're... You know, other than Alabama, probably nobody going to blow them out if they just play good football. Tennessee's played good football in every game, including Alabama. They're just don't have enough in their rear end to do anything there, except the Florida game. That's where they had all the turnovers. I believe I'm correct on this. Take Florida out of it. Florida, 6 turnovers there. Tennessee's only had either 5 or 6 turnovers in all the rest of the game, so they're really playing pretty well from that standpoint. But they got the game into the fourth quarter. I had every opportunity to win, and made some bad defensive mistakes, undisciplined type mistakes, made some undisciplined mistakes on offense. Well, they weren't mistakes on offense. When your two best receivers get 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, that's bad. And it hurt. But they had an opportunity. I give South Carolina a lot of credit for sticking with the game plan. South Carolina ran 40 runs and 16 passes. They had a game plan that they stuck with on offense and defense, and it ended up allowing them to win the game. And they're a little bit better team, but not a whole lot better. I think from what we've seen last week, you can take Georgia and put them a little bit better than everybody else in the East. Florida maybe, and then everybody else just about the same, and that's why we're going to see Vanderbilt, Missouri, and Tennessee, and probably even Kentucky at the end of the year, and South Carolina all kind of kick around and win a few ball games, and Kentucky's got hot now, and they're winning those games that are kind of toss-up games because they're playing well.
Coach, you mentioned that South Carolina stuck with their game plan, which was focused on the run. Was Tennessee, you think, maybe 3 points away from when they built that lead, another field goal away from forcing South Carolina out of that plan? And whenever you were coaching, was there a specific score or a deficit that had you break out the other game plan, the option B going into the night?
Well, I thought when Tennessee scored and went up 2 scores, they had a really good chance then because it didn't look like Carolina without some help was going to be able to score that many more points. And, you know, Tennessee only scored 3 points in the second half. Mm-hmm. Or, well, after the first drive of the second half, they got to 21. They only scored three more. So it was more their defensive game plan that I liked, in that they kept Tennessee from throwing the ball deep. Now, puzzling to me, after what happened in Auburn, the Auburn game, and what happened in the Alabama game, from a throwing the ball 30 or more yards down the field, particularly to Juwan Jennings, coming out of that ball game, when you have, and I don't say this tongue-in-cheek, when you have a tight end that split out, that you throw more takeoff routes to than you do Juwan Jennings, you need to check your whole card, because that is bad coaching and that is bad play calling, and that's what Tennessee did. So they got away from doing what they did. Tennessee would have never beaten Auburn without the deep throws. Never beaten, only won by 7 anyway. And they wouldn't have scored against Alabama without throwing the ball down the field. We only threw 2. The whole ball game, and it's really perplexing to me to understand from an offensive game plan how you cannot get that done. And again, that I don't say this very often, that is bad game day coaching. Now, they had a wonderful offensive game plan. I really, you know, getting the ball to the right people. But the one thing that you have to do in this league, if there's one thing that I am 100% certain of, if you can't complete deep passes in this league, you're not going to win many ball games. Just look at Alabama. As good as Alabama is, what are they tremendous at? They complete deep throws down the field. And if you can't do that, you're not going to win. You're not going to win many ball games. Point blank. Anybody you watch play in this league, and it's because of the style of defense you see, they put a lot of pressure on those cornerbacks. Everybody out there almost is playing the pressure man out there to get the safeties up to stop the run and take away the short stuff, that you have to attack them deep. And we didn't do that. And we still had an opportunity to win, had a great game plan otherwise. But to not be able to say we're going to throw X amount of passes. And again, going back to the Auburn game, I think we threw 8 of them and completed 5. We didn't complete a single pass against South Carolina. And I think that in the end, it ended up biting us the rear and had an opportunity, but didn't get it done.
What do you think of Jarrett Garantano's play? He missed, I think, 3 passes on deep outs that he's normally completed this year where guys were open. But other than that, statistically, had a pretty good game. What do you think of the game plan with him other than not taking deep shots? And what do you think of his play overall?
I think the other part of it was really good. I think he was 17 for 24, I think something like that. But Chad, you just kind of touched on it, and I'm going to be a little bit wrong on the exact figures. Had 2 touchdowns off of it, and but only had like 210 yards passing. Well, in 17 completions, you should be getting more yardage than that, and some of those yardage were a little throw and catch. They did a real good job of using the width of the field by a lot of different ways. Got the ball to Chandler out there, got the ball certainly to Callaway, and got the ball to Jennings some. Again, if you don't throw the ball deep, you eventually can't throw the ball short. And the second half, and particularly the last quarter and half, South Carolina knew those things were coming and did a good job of stopping them. But it gets back where you simply must take your shots down the field. Somebody has to be keeping track of those and reminding the play caller that we got to do it. And that didn't happen last week.
104.5 The Zone, Nashville's home for the NFL. Sunday Night Football, Patriots and Packers. Sunday night at 6:30 on 104.5 The Zone.
We are on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. You can always hear Doug Matthews weekends right here on 104.5 The Zone. 9 a.m., Forklift Systems Football Saturday. 11 a.m., Coach to Coach with Doug Matthews, Dave McGinnis, and Larry Stone. And then Sunday mornings, the best hour-long discussion on Tennessee football. That happens Sunday mornings, 8 a.m., right here on The Zone.
We're going to get into Bama LSU. We're going to get into that wild finish of the Missouri-Kentucky game. We'll talk other SEC games as well. But while we're talking Tennessee, Coach, I want to ask you about the run game. They finally got something going against an SEC opponent on the ground, and they did it a little bit differently. What'd you think of how they ran the ball on Saturday night? What'd you think of Marcus Tatum filling in for Trey Smith, of course, with the news last week that he's not playing anymore?
Well, they got a cobbled together offensive line. It kind of started a couple of weeks ago with a couple of minor injuries and then people not playing very well. You lose Trey Smith, who's your best offensive lineman. Now, I'll say this. Trey Smith has just been a pretty good offensive lineman, but he's the best.
This year, you're saying?
This year. Yeah. And it's simply because of his health problems, he's not been able to lift and work out. He's getting by on pure talent. His talent is excellent. Certainly will translate to the next level if, I mean, he's got, you know, that blood clot thing is a serious, serious deal. And I'll say this for Tennessee and their training staff. They've done a great job keeping up with that, and they have a way to monitor that now because, as we know, blood clots can be, you know, the great Harry Galbraith, that's what he passed away from. Had a blood clot that hit his heart. So that's serious stuff. But they've done a really good job of that. I doubt that he will be back this year. We'll see what his future holds, hopefully, for him. But I thought Tatum came in. You know, Tatum's a light guard playing tackle. Certainly they had some problems with the snap count. But all in all, I thought they played pretty darn well, really, as a group. And, again, it's a cobbled-together group. They haven't had a whole lot of consistency all year long. And then when you take a key part of it out and add somebody, that even lessens your consistency. But I thought all in all that they did a good job. Now, I will say this. South Carolina did not use a lot of pressure against them by bringing, you know, too many people very often. They helped them out a little bit in that regard. But Alabama and Auburn didn't either, and they got in there a good bit of time. But I thought all in all they played about as well as they could play, which is offensive line-wise, which is, quite frankly, average. If they can play average, they're playing about to their level.
On the fumble that wasn't called, South Carolina down the goal line, should Jeremy Pruitt call a timeout there to give them a longer look at it? And you're starting to kind of hear the explanation of, well, they don't have enough cameras on these SEC network games. Like if the game was on CBS, in Tennessee's cameras in the All-22 clearly show that he fumbled. Is that a good enough excuse from a league that makes as much money as they do off television?
Well, it's just the way it is right now. You know, the league doesn't have anything to do with the SEC network as far as how many cameras they do and all that. Now, they probably could demand that if they wanted to. But and the fact about and I think Coach Pruitt said this, which is just facts. There doesn't do any good to take a timeout because the league, the officials look at that every single play anyway. And if there's any question, that's why you see them kind of, they'll delay it and look at it. So they had looked at it enough. You're just wasting a timeout, basically, because you know
he was standing with one of the officials seeing if they were going to blow the play to look at it.
Yeah.
I noticed when that was going on, he was down there kind of looking up, seeing if they were going to stop it.
The Steve Shaw tells every one of these head coaches, the officials tell them before the game that we review every play. The chances of you getting something reversed by calling for a review is are slim and none. And so every head coach knows that. And they do review every play. There's some that they miss. I looked at it, you know, and you could make a case that it was a fumble, but then you could say, well, was he across yet? You know, there's a lot of things to that. You know, Tennessee fans want to think it was, but I'm not. But it it was not going to be called, so there wasn't any use to waste any time on that.
So LSU, like a lot of schools, has an Alabama problem. It waits and waits and waits and waits. It gets Alabama in a home game when it's ranked number 3 in the country, and it gets the best Alabama team we've ever seen, conceivably. You've got some numbers that you were reading us during the break about just the invincibility of Alabama's offense. You see any scenario where LSU's the team to pull off the miracle, or just more agony for the Tigers?
Paul, I don't see any way LSU can win this game unless Alabama loses this game, and they're going to have to play poorly on offense. This is not may not be the best Alabama team ever. I don't think there's any doubt, going back to when I played in the late 60s, it's the best offense that I've ever seen Alabama have, and they've had some good ones even in the Wishbone days. Defensively, they might not quite be there, but, you know, they're pretty
darn...
Doesn't
matter when the offense is doing
well, and they're pretty darn good. I mean, when you say they're not the best defense, well, they've had some great defenses there, but I don't see, unless they just give the game away by, you know, block kicks or interceptions, which... You know, Tua hasn't thrown an interception all year. They do so many things to put a defense, give you so many problems that I don't see any team in the conference, and frankly, nationally, I don't know if there's a team, maybe Clemson, that can score with these guys. If you don't score 34, 35, 36 points, you're not even going to be in the game at the end of the game. That's how good they are. And, you know, you can have an off week. And Tiger Stadium is a tough place to play, but you still got to, you know, these guys are used to playing in pretty tough places. Most of these guys that are playing this ball game played in a couple of national championship games, a semifinal game. They played against the best on the road. I don't see any way they can lose this ball game.
I'm trying to pull up the spread. I'm sure it's not as uncommon for there to be a big spread between 1 versus 3 as I think it is, but. And my computer's being slow here, but it's got to be double digits.
It is. It's 14, I think. You talking about this game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's 14 and a half.
And Chad, how often is a 1 versus 3 a 2-touchdown game?
I mean, think about these playoff games when Alabama gets there. Outside of maybe Clemson.
Clemson's you're looking 9 or 7?
Yeah, you're looking at 2-touchdown spreads, even in the college football playoff when Alabama gets there. It's we talked about it with UConn women. Yeah, I know that they haven't won quite similar, to that level, but if I'm going to make the argument that UConn women, it's bad for women's basketball, it makes the rest of the sport look bad. Alabama, Nick Saban, they're making a lot of coaches look foolish.
Well, I know
right
that
now, all over America.
I know that fan bases, you know, sometimes don't like to hear that about the dominance, but we haven't ever seen dominance like this in my lifetime, and I'm old enough, more than most people out there, and they just dominating. And it's because they got the best college football coach. I never thought I'd ever see anyone close to Bryant. You could make a strong argument he is better than Coach Bryant. And it's just the day in and day out consistency. They simply don't have an off game. They may not play, you know, they may not execute the best all the time. They may be off a little bit here or there. But they simply don't have an off game. And you go back, you look at the games that they've lost the last 6-7 years. Most of the time, it's been by a hot. And this is why I think another big reason I don't think LSU will. It may be close at half, may not. But you don't have anybody. You don't beat Alabama without a hot quarterback. And Joe Burrow is a good quarterback.
Yes.
He's a solid quarterback, but he doesn't throw the ball down the field, and you're not going to beat him if you don't throw the ball down the field. Again, unless they're fumbling the ball on their 2-3-6-yard line 2 or 3 times.
104.5 The Zone is your home for Titans football. Titans football. And you're home for Titans Ticket Tuesday. Sponsored by Coca-Cola. Tune in for chances to win during the Wake Up Zone, Midday 180 and 3HL. You could be at Nissan Stadium this fall thanks to Coca-Cola. Titans Ticket Tuesday from the official station of the Titans. 104.5 The Zone.
I was working in the lab late one night. My eyes beheld an eerie sight.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Happy Halloween to you. Hopefully the kids have a good night if you're going trick-or-treating this evening. Doug Matthews is in studio with us. And if you're in his area, your kid's going to get some good candy tonight. He's into Halloween. Go to the Matthews house. If you know where it is, you can go on the road as we do. We're presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office this hour. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive.
And drive smart tonight, no matter what.
Yes, yes.
No matter what.
Let's go to Buddy on line one. Hey, Buddy.
Hey, gentlemen. Coach, just want to tell you, I enjoyed watching you play football for Vanderbilt. That was back when the men wore three-piece suits and the women wore their mink coats.
Hey, Buddy, will you describe Doug Matthews as a player for us?
That heck guy sucked. That's all I can say. No, but got a question for you, Coach. When Tennessee's got the ball on, I think it was their 38 with 40 plus seconds left. Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they try and go down and at least get a field goal rather than just taking a knee? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Yeah,
you're
talking about going in at halftime. You know, I don't know. That's a good question. I think they had a timeout maybe left. You know, number one, they were going to get the ball coming out the second half. And let me just say this real quickly. This is the best game Tennessee had. They started off the game kicking off by choice, had a three and out, and then came out the second half, got the ball, and went down, scored a touchdown. I think that was probably what was going through his mind there. And just did he, you know, we were not throwing the ball down the field much anyway. I would guess that would be what it was. But, you know, I think maybe hindsight, maybe one of the lessons that he came out of that was we probably should have done that. But I probably got that advice from his he's the defensive coordinator. Probably got the advice of maybe let's get in, get some things straightened out, come out and score the second half. He mentioned that at the ball game that he challenged the offense to come out and score the first win the second half. And they did a good job of the first drive doing that, and then that was it for the rest of the game. Only 3 points after that.
Two coaching questions for you, Coach. One schematic, one behavioral. How do you handle two of your best players at wide receiver racking up 30 yards after the play with unsportsmanlike conduct, knowing that you're going to need those guys ultimately? Especially considering one guy, Juwan Jennings, that's sort of how he plays. That's certainly not necessary for him. That's kind of the edge that he plays with. How do you handle that on the sideline and moving forward with those guys?
Well, that's a tough question. I was asking myself when that happened, what will he do with Juwan? Because that was number one, it was selfish. Number one, it was unnecessary. I mean, that's going to get called 110% of the time. It's right there, you know, you just right in front of the official, and it didn't accomplish anything. But on the other hand of it is how much, you know, I used to love what Coach Fulmer used to say, you know, do you punish one guy and then by doing that punish your whole team? That's a head coach's question on it. Decided not to. I think that was pretty smart. I'm sure he did some things after that. And then Callaway, the same thing. Just a silly little show. See, that's the difference, though. Look at the good teams. Look at the – and it doesn't have anything to do with well-coached or not well-coached. You have to learn to do this over a period of time. How often do you see – let's just go to Alabama or Georgia or the good teams. How often do you see them get a pre-snap penalty or a post-snap penalty? How often do you see – there's no more aggressive defense in America than Alabama. How often do you see them hit somebody out of bounds? Never. How many times do you see them hit after a penalty, get a targeting call? Never. That isn't by accident. It's not because they're not aggressive or tough or mean, or it's not because they don't trash talk in between plays. It's that they've been coached and learned over a period of time. You simply can't do that and win ball games. And that those two plays – had something to do, wasn't the reason Tennessee lost, but certainly had something to do with it. If nothing more, you're kicking off. It's after you score a touchdown, you're kicking off now instead of kicking off. You're kicking off from 15 yards further back. You kick from the 20 instead of the 35. You're going to give them better field position because they're going to return the ball. And, you know, did it affect the ball game? Probably.
They went down and scored 7 after that.
Now, and they might have if they, you know, they drove the ball quite a bit. But it's just unnecessary. There's no reason to do it. And, again, that comes from a lot of different things, building up some things. But your answer, you know, I'm sure he thought about it. I'm sure he thought about setting him over on the bench. But then you see him catch a pass and run over people. You know how tough and, you know, you kind of live with it at times. But that, again, that's a head coach. Most assistants would say get him out of there. Most head football coaches say, yeah, let's think about that a little bit.
First game I really thought this year that Jeremy Pruitt and his defensive staff were out-schemed, out-coached on that side of the ball. How in the world was South Carolina getting 7 to 15 yards before anyone touched them on most of their second-half runs?
Let's talk about a couple of things in this game that I wanted to get in there. I think it's very important. First off, I think everybody would agree South Carolina overall has better talent than Tennessee at this particular point.
Sure, right now.
Tennessee came out, and let's just look going into this game. Tennessee's coming off a butt-kicking by their biggest rival at home. South Carolina's coming into this game with an off week. You're playing the game in South Carolina, so you had almost every advantage going to South Carolina. And what South Carolina did, they ran an offense that they had not run before at any time this year. They had two tight ends, two wide receivers, and or one wide receiver, two tight ends, and two running backs. And what they did was, it was the perfect offense to go against Tennessee's defense, and here's why. Tennessee's best, their base defense, is five defensive backs. So that means you only have six guys, linebackers, defensive linemen, however you want to line them up. When you put two tight ends in the game, and one of them is an H-back, you got seven potential blockers up there, big body blockers, and you got only six big bodies to block. So that means Tennessee's either got to substitute an outside linebacker, which they really don't have any of those guys now that Kongbo's out. So they don't have those guys. They want to stay in their five defensive back package, and it forces them to get one of those guys involved. And what happened as the game went on was, you have to get a safety involved. You got to get Warrior involved. Todd Kelly Jr. started. He's a run guy too. But then it makes you play man coverage behind that Tennessee really doesn't want to play. And in the end, that's what ended up costing them it. Even though they ran the ball a lot, Tennessee's had three major busts in the secondary that was caused by really secondary people coming up on running quarterback. They had two plays that really hurt them badly where the quarterback broke pocket. You're taught as a defensive back to stay back. If you're in coverage, whether you're a linebacker or a defensive back, and a quarterback breaks outside the pocket, you never leave your man or leave your zone and come up to make a tackle until he is definitely across the line of scrimmage. There was two times in that ball game Tennessee did. He pulled up, completed passes, and they ended up getting touchdowns out of that. And again, that comes from disciplined play. But to answer your question, South Carolina did it. They had the perfect offense to run against Tennessee's defense at this point. Tennessee wants to play more zone. They want to play more zone and he's not a zone coach, but he wants to play more zone. Why? Todd Kelly Jr. is not very fast. Nigel Warrior is not very fast. When they have Schamberger in there, he's not very fast. When they hit 28.
Baylen Buchanan.
Buchanan is not very fast. So they don't want to play a lot of man coverage, but they forced them into playing man coverage and were able to take advantage of it in that fourth quarter.
104.5 The Zone, Nashville's home for football. Sunday, it's the Broncos and Texans from Denver. Coverage starts Sunday at 2:30 on 104.5 The Zone.
Oh, devil woman, let go me. Devil woman, let me be and leave me alone. I want to go home.
This is the theme song of the Doug Matthews Hour.
Now that is bumper music. Marty Robbins. Down in our
shack by the sea. On the road with Doug Matthews. You should see the smile on his face.
When this song was hot, this is when they'd wear suits and ties to football
games.
That's
right. El Paso. Maybe the second greatest probably country song ever.
I think my mom listens to that and thinks it's a little old.
I would hope so.
It's a little old.
She's a smart lady.
Doug, your initial reaction to the college football playoff rankings and which matchup, based on what you see through the top 6 to 8 teams, do you think would give Alabama the most trouble?
You just kind of look at it, you know, about what you thought. Here's the thing that I have to keep in mind. I'm sure you all do too. What that college football playoff committee looks at, it's a snapshot of what's happened to date. It has nothing to do with what's happened in the future. Obviously, LSU and Alabama, they play this week. So LSU's either going to have two losses and be out of it, or Alabama's going to have one. You got some other teams happening in there also. But if you just look down there at it, this is everything I will be looking at to beat Alabama going forward is kind of what I talked about earlier. How many points can you score? Because you're going to have to score in the 30s to beat Alabama. On a bad day, they're going to score 30. Now, there's some really good defensive teams. Let's take Michigan. I think Michigan might be the best defensive team in the country. They are Clemson, and it's kind of hard to tell because they play different styles of offenses. But I don't think Michigan can score enough points to beat Alabama if they play them. And I question whether Clemson have for this reason. I know that this freshman kid's really good, but he's going to be playing against a defense that's going to make him be better than very good if he plays Alabama, because they will send everything that they have. They haven't done a whole lot of pressuring from their outside linebackers or secondary this year. They haven't had to. They've got that in their arsenal, and they rush and hit people. The thing that Alabama, again, I'm talking about Alabama, but their defense does, when they bring a cornerback or a nickelback or a safety or a linebacker on a blitz, when they get to that quarterback, they hurt him. They run right through him. And to use Coach Pruitt's words, they don't tippy-toe through the line of scrimmage. They go hit him. So I don't really see anybody on there that is capable of scoring that many points. I just don't know. Notre Dame, Clemson might. I haven't watched Clemson as much as I've watched the rest, but I don't think Georgia, if Georgia plays Alabama in the SEC championship game, I don't think they'll come close to beating them, quite honestly. I don't see anybody that's going to score that many points.
Do you think Kentucky comes close to Georgia this weekend? And let's also recap the finish of that Kentucky-Missouri game. How is Kentucky getting it done at this point? It's amazing to watch how they're winning some of these games.
Let me tell you one little or big coaching point that you'd have to really understand, had been a coach to understand. Let me tell you where the biggest mistake in that game was made. Let's go back. When you talk about game day coaching by a head football coach, let's go back. Missouri had the ball. Kentucky had two timeouts. Ball was somewhere around the 50-yard line, somewhere around there. Late in the game, there was a minute 20, minute 25 left. Kentucky ran the ball on second down. Missouri ran the ball on second down. Kentucky stopped him, called a timeout. Now they got one timeout left, and there's about a minute 10, minute 15 left in the game. Third down, about six, and Kentucky has one timeout left. You run the ball again. They use their last timeout. You punt the football down somewhere around the 20. Kentucky hadn't moved it 80 yards the whole game. They have no timeouts left. Just go back and look how that game ended. Kentucky ended up with that one timeout remaining, calling a timeout where they was able to, it was about 30 seconds left or so. The clock would have been running. Calling a timeout to get in position to throw the play that got the interference call to get gave them the opportunity to win the ball game. They don't have an opportunity if you don't utilize that timeout. And that's game day coaching that smart head football coaches simply, if he's on that headset and that offensive, and he is, and that offensive coordinator calls a pass, ho hoss, I don't care what you're running, but you run something that's going to stay in bounds and make them use the timeout. That's a perfect example of a team taking away an opportunity to win a big ball game.
How mad are you at that pass interference call if you're a Missouri, a coach, a fan, anyone watching that final play?
Well, you got to be upset with it. But listen, remember, the head coach at Missouri is a defense coordinator.
Yep.
He know that you're going to get, if it's a close, they're not going to call pass interference unless you just take a forearm and hit a guy in the face, you know, and knock him down or shove him down. That's the way it is, so you live with that. And I thought he handled it pretty well, but boy, that was a tough call. It was a tough way to lose a ball game. They still had an opportunity to stop him, though.
Let's go to Tom up on line one. Hey, Tom.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Doug, I have a question. What is the difference between a guard and a tackle and the function of each one? I heard you say a minute ago somebody was going to be a light tackle. But what is the difference? What does each one of them, is their function on the offensive line?
Biggest difference is, number one, from a body style, you can hear all about the long arms and all that, and that is true somewhat. But a good guard, a good tackle can play guard and vice versa. But the big difference is this. You're on the outside. When you're a guard and obviously a center, the two inside guys, you can get the three inside guys, you can get help. You got a limited area where a guy can pass rush. So you can get help, you know, in there. When you're out there on the tackle, you're out there one-on-one. And as far as light, I was talking about weight. He'd have been a light guard, too. He weighs about 280, 285. If you're not a 300-pounder in this league now on the offensive line, you're going to get knocked around a good bit. You need to be more than that, quite frankly. But not a whole lot of difference. That's overrated in college. In pros, it's not. But I just asked this question of a guy. You know, you're talking about the blind side. Everybody likes to talk about that. That's so overused. But where's the blind side on Tua? If you got a left-handed, if your blind side guy is a left tackle, and you got a left-handed thrower,
right tackle.
Who is it? You know. So anyway, but that's not a big difference there. If you can play guard, most of those guys are athletic enough to be athletic enough to play everything.
Be sure to listen to Doug Matthews this weekend, Saturday morning, 9 a.m., 9 to 11, is Forklift Systems Football Saturday. He and Tony Barnhart and Charles Davis, they will get you ready for kickoff across the SEC, especially with Tennessee for sure, and they'll be previewing LSU and Alabama.
Big, some really, I think, neat things in that game we'll talk about Saturday, what I think shifts the game to major in favor of Alabama.
11 a.m. on Saturday. Coach to Coach with Doug Matthews, Dave McGinnis, and Larry Stone. And Sunday morning, the best hour-long discussion of Tennessee football, a big recap with Big Orange Sunday. Sunday mornings, 8 a.m., right here on The Zone. Doug Matthews, he's on the road with us every Wednesday, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive.